Read Me Like a Book. Written by XOXO Emin and recorded by Tipsy Kitty. Fandom, our flag means death. Summary. This is a story of strategy, of intrigue, of history's most brilliant tactician at work, battling fantastic odds to achieve victory at any cost. Or, Ed learns of the existence of Steed's sexy little reading glasses, and embarks upon the romantic mission of a lifetime to make sure he's able to see them on his perfect face forever and always. There may or may not be ghosts. Blackbeard, notorious pirate captain of the Seven Seas, history's most brilliant tactician, and all-around fucking badass, scans his surroundings. His eyes narrow as he marks his target, and he laughs under his breath. There's no mercy in his heart today. His only goal is conquest, and he's not leaving without taking what he's after. What happens to the poor soul who gets in his way? Well, that's between him and his maker. This is fucking war. He approaches, steel in his heart, fire in his veins, and victory on the brain. Hello, sir. May I help you with anything? Ed stuns half the marketplace with a carefully, careless toss of his hair, and gives the merchant his most winning smile. Yes, I'd like to see what books you have available. Ah, you're in luck, the merchant says, with his own version of a winning smile, which Ed can't help but think pales in comparison to his own. He walks Ed over to the far side of his modest display. We have a fine selection, all for very reasonable prices. Ed scans the titles. Don Quixote might be nice. It could be a nod to the night he and Steed first met. Paradise Lost? Too depressing. As far as Ed's concerned, Paradise has been fucking found, and he has no interest in losing it again. An essay on criticism? Fuck that. No need to listen to someone be an annoying little shit and complain about everything. Gulliver's Travels? Had potential. Could be interesting. His eyes fall on the fattest book on the table, and he points to it. How much is that one? Ah, wise selection, sir, the merchant says, picking it up and brushing off its cover. The complete works of William Shakespeare. Quite hard to come by. Yeah, I just bet, Ed says, feeling his coin purse. How much? Well, normally I'd say a book of this caliber would go for no less than 30 doubloons, the merchant says, his smile growing wider. But I like the look of your face, so I'll make you a deal. How about 25? Ed forces his own smile even wider. No bloody two-bit book merchant is going to outfake smile him. 25? Pfft, had a merchant here just last week who was selling it for half that. It's a lie, of course. They rarely get merchants around these parts. Or, really, anyone around these parts. It's why business that they're in hasn't picked up at all. And also why Ed currently only has 12 doubloons in his coin purse. But this guy has no way of knowing that. Oh, I very much doubt that, the merchant says, his fucking fake smile looking like it's trying to crawl into his fucking ears. And if he did, I doubt it was in this condition. Pristine, not a rip, tear, nor dog ear to be seen. Ed says. He strategically dims his smile by about 17%, adopting a look of concerned consideration. I dare say I'd have to be the judge of that. May I? The merchant hums and eagerly hands over the book. Ed tries not to openly scoff at him. Control your enemy's pride, he's always said, and you own them. Of course, sir. As you can see, it's in mint condition, as though it's never even been read. He lets out a fake guffaw, and somehow it's even more annoying than his fake fucking smile. Probably a wasted gift to some boy on scholarship who doesn't even know how to read. Ed hums as he thumbs through the book. Well, that certainly makes this easier. Now, wouldn't you say? Ed slams the book shut as swiftly as a storm blowing in, and it connects with the merchant's belly with a solid, resounding thwack. The man bends over double at the waist, wheezing. His head is right there. Frankly, it'd be irresponsible not to give it a good bonk. And Ed's very responsible these days. He's a small business owner. He whacks the merchant over the head with his booty and, well pleased with himself, takes off running home. This is all Lucius's fault, Ed thinks as he sprints through the trees. Really? If he hadn't mentioned how positively Dilfy Steed looked in his sexy little reading glasses, Ed never would have realized that he'd never even seen Steed in said reading glasses. And he wouldn't have had to come up with the entire mission in the first place. I just don't really need them, Steed had said when Ed asked why he never seemed to wear them these days. I don't spend nearly as much time reading as I used to. It doesn't put the same amount of strain on my eyes. And that had been un-fucking-acceptable. Not the fact that Steed's eyes weren't strained, no. They were a beautiful hazel that never seemed to be the exact same color any two times Ed looked. They reminded Ed of running water over pebbles in the creek behind their inn. They deserved to be treated with reverence, with admiration, like two mean, fluffy white cats who lounged about all day in plush velvet pillows. No, Ed certainly didn't want Steed's eyes to be strained. It was more the fact that Steed should be wanting for anything. His steed. His perfect, magnificent, made him believe in magic and also things even more real and wonderful than magic, steed. Steed, who told Ed he had no second thoughts, or third, or fourth, or 700 thoughts, because yes, Ed had asked, and that there is nowhere he'd rather be than by Ed's side, building a new life together. But first, he'd given up his fortune, for Ed. And then he'd given up his ship, for Ed. Ed wasn't about to have him give up his fucking hobbies. Not on his watch. Especially not if said hobby would allow Ed to finally appreciate him in those sexy spectacles. Sextacles. Interesting. That might also refer to sexy tentacles. A hilarious image of a ferocious kraken, with a pair of tiny glasses upon his giant bulb of a head as he blows kisses with all of his tentacles, undulates across Ed's mind, and he laughs. That's his steed. The old nightmares have lost their bite. And now Ed is going to restore all of Steed's old dreams. I don't understand, Steed says as he massages Ed's knee just the way he likes later that night. What were you doing running? Ed shrugs. Love a good run. Good for the heart. Steed's brow furrows. But you were just saying yesterday how it was bothering you, and that's why you weren't able to join me grocery shopping. Ah, Ed had said that. His strategic genius maybe, understandably, falters under the undeniably brilliant intensity of Steed's probing questions, as well as his deftly probing fingers. Fuck. He's at risk of being found out, and his lovely surprise ruined. It was only that Steed out of the inn for a few hours yesterday had given Ed just the right amount of time to skedaddle over to the neighbor's, relatively speaking, a modest cottage no more than 2 miles away, surely, who had an old set of armchairs they were looking to get rid of. And, in his defense, he hadn't realized his little book shopping trip today would turn into a raid. And fuck, Ed really needs to hurry up with his plan. Between the fact that he hates lying to Steed, even if it is for super cool, romantic, ultimately worthwhile purposes, and the fact that Steed notices everything about him like a professional fucking noticer, which, to be honest, makes Ed feel all warm and tingly inside, even after 2 years together, he's bound to be caught out sooner rather than later. Fortunately, he still has a few tricks up his sleeve. Up his pants. Up his right pant leg specifically, because it just hangs like that. Always has. He pulls Steed up onto his lap and trails his hands up and down Steed's sides, lowers his voice by a strategic half-octave, flutters his lashes a little, just for some flair. Maybe I just wanted an excuse to have you ride me. Success. Steed gives a delicate, full-body shiver in Ed's arms. Oh, darling, he says with a smile. You never need an excuse for that. He leans down to kiss Ed. And all secrets and strategies are quickly forgotten in favor of other, more familiar intimacies. The next day, thanks in no small part to how very generously accommodating Steed had been, Ed's knee is feeling much better, but he's starting to become mildly anxious about how much there's left to do on his little project. So when Steed asks him over breakfast if he'd like to go out fishing that day, Ed comes up with a brilliant excuse on the fly. The fish and I have a truce, he says. I have to give him a free pass for the week. Spur of the moment stuff. He can barely believe how fucking brilliant he is sometimes. Steed frowns. A truce? But why? Clother King last week, Ed says, popping the rest of his chocolate croissant in his mouth. Created all kinds of social unrest in the waters. Told them I'd take mercy on them, give them time to choose their next ruler. Surely rolled his passes to the king's eldest son. No, Ed says solemnly. Fish society is much more complex than humans. There's a whole ritual that needs to take place. Serious fish business. Ah, Steed says. Well, then, I suppose we'll have to figure out something else for supper. Oh, no, you should still go fishing, Ed says. In fact, don't come back until you've caught at least 5 fish. Big ones. But the truce only applies to me, Ed says. Like I said, he wiggles his fingers. Complex. Well, if you say so, Steed says. Are you sure you won't be bored around here by yourself? Ah, no. I got plenty to keep me busy. Ed begins clearing the table, dropping a kiss to the top of Steed's head along the way. Wanted to work on the roof anyway. You go. Have fun. Maybe catch the queen. Create total anarchy. The inn has 3 whole rooms, aside from the kitchen. The biggest and best of the 3 is Ed and Steed's, and the 2 smaller rooms are for guests. Will be for guests. Whenever some guests see fit to fucking arrive, that is. And because guest rooms aren't exactly going at a premium thus far, when Steed leaves with a delightfully floppy hat atop his perfect head, Ed rushes to guest room number 2 and locks the door behind him, just to be safe. Honestly, with all the work Ed's been putting into keeping it a secret, it's no surprise how much he's been able to accomplish without Steed noticing. He's chopped up the bed and dresser and turned them into 2 built-in bookcases that flank the fireplace that's nearly cleared out well enough to actually light. There are 2 armchairs, which are actually in decent enough condition, although he suspects Steed will eventually prefer a finer fabric for the upholstery. He's managed to find some really nice, deep purple drapes for the windows, but has held off hanging them for now lest Steed notice them from the outside. He's even built a small table to go between the armchairs, atop which rests a pretty bottle vase he traded for one of his daggers a few weeks ago. It's the perfect spot for Steed to set his sexy little reading glasses, the very accessory that started this whole project in the first place. But the sad fact is that libraries, no matter how cozy and well-decorated, require books, and of those, Ed has very few. There's the Shakespeare, which thankfully takes up a fair amount of real estate, and there are the 3 books Steed had acquired since they'd moved into the inn, and 2 that Ed swiped from their first, and so far only, guests during their stay. There's supposed to be a book from Lucius, a replica of the log he kept for Steed during their adventures at sea, but some people apparently view deadlines as suggestions. The fucking creatives. The point is, Ed has 6 books. And there's really only so much you can do with 6 books, even if you're a strategic fucking genius. Ed tries putting 1 book on each shelf, keeping them all bunched together, even splitting all but 1 of them up between the 2 bookcases, and setting the final one out, oh so casually, on the little table between the armchairs. But no matter what he tries, the end result is the same. Everything just looks too empty. Fuck, he really didn't think this through. How's he supposed to give Steed a fucking library without more than 6 fucking books? He thinks, with a pang, of all the books he'd had the crew toss into the ocean. Steed's told him at least 700 times that he doesn't blame Ed for it all, and most days Ed even believes him. But he wants Steed to be happy, always. And this would have been such a ludicrously simple thing if only he hadn't... Well, no sense dwelling on that now. He has a library to create from scratch if need be. And need fucking be. His next thought is to make some books of his own. He has some letters he's found in bottles that washed up upon the shore. Not the ones from Steed. Those are all precious and safely stashed away in a little box atop their dresser. Along with some old signs he's torn down from the marketplace and a few other odds and ends. Maybe he could do something crafty? Cut up all the letters and reform them into new sentences in a way that might look aesthetically very cool? Unfortunately, the results mostly just end up looking like letters from a serial killer, so he quickly tosses those aside. Then Ed thinks, fuck using other people's words. He can come up with some of his own. He grabs some paper and some ink and Steed's best quill. And this is fucking great. He's positively overflowing with brilliant ideas. An epic adventure with mystery and intrigue, and maybe a beautiful prince who's swept off his feet by a handsome blonde knight with a frankly adorable laugh, which will naturally lead to some really fucking hot sex, and, oh boy, that's a ticket. Ed has even more ideas to jot down. Until he actually goes to jot them down, and then he realizes he's somehow forgotten every word in the English language, let alone how to string them together, and fuck, he's wasted 2 hours. And Steed will most likely be growing annoyed with fishing right about now, and he'll be home soon. And Ed has nothing to show for his efforts. He finally settles on the fucking least brilliant solution, which is to make some fake books out of bits of wood and scraps of old leather. Obviously, Steed won't be able to read them, but at least they'll make the shelves look a bit less empty and sad. He's on his 7th book when he hears Steed's voice calling him from outside. Ed! Ed, get some fresh linens! You won't believe who I found!
Fuck,
Ed mutters, and begins frantically tidying up his art project, shoving his materials into a large chest of treasure they've yet to liquidate in case they need emergency coin. A big old fucking pirate's treasure chest isn't really the most suitable for a library, but it wouldn't fit with the rest of them in their closet with Steed's cozy winter feelings wardrobe, so... Anyway, he'll have to come up with some other excuse to get Steed out of the house again later. Ed exits the library, closes the door quickly behind him, and nearly falls flat on his ass.
Oh, careful, Steed says, too late. We had a bit of an incident.
We, it seems, are Steed, who is beaming at Ed from ear to ear, and Lucius, who is glaring daggers at him. Both of them are drenched to the skin and soaking Ed's floors in the process. Steed has a bit of seaweed behind his left ear, though, and it's really fucking adorable, so Ed's willing to overlook it for the time being.
What happened?
Ed asks. Well, I was out fishing, like I said. Caught 2 whole fish. Big ones, too. They were all right, Lucius corrects snippily, picking a piece of plankton from the damp handkerchief tied limply around his neck. Steed charges on, apparently not hearing him. When what do I see but the revenge? And Lucius just stepping out into a dinghy, on his way to pay us a quick visit. Isn't that a coincidence? Behind Steed's back, Lucius cocks his head pointedly at Ed. Ed coughs.
Yeah,
he says.
Coincidence.
Well, naturally I told him it was silly to bring 2 dinghies to the inn, so I insisted he join me in my dinghy so we could catch up along the way, and, well, I'm afraid Lucius lost his balance. I have impeccable balance, Lucius snaps. The fish were just extra floppy.
A fact that shouldn't have mattered if you had impeccable balance, Steed says. But that's all right. All is not lost. We still have Lucius.
Having nearly recovered from death by slip and fall, a sinking thought occurs to Ed.
Did you lose everything?
Well, both of the fish, unfortunately, Steed says. Also, the rod and tackle. But that's okay. I was getting tired of fish anyway.
Ah, no. I meant our guests' things.
Ed attempts to sound only politely concerned, around 70% less than he actually is, even though his heart is racing. Because if, after all this, Lucius managed to lose the very book Ed commissioned and has been counting on for months, well, he'll have no choice but to draw himself a lavender-scented bubble bath and drown himself in it until Steed came to rescue him again. But Lucius holds up a remarkably dry-looking satchel. I invested in a waterproof bag a while back, he says with a roll of his eyes. Since somehow, whenever I'm around you two, I wind up wet. Well, bit of an occupational hazard when you're a pirate, I'd say, Steed says. A wise decision, Lucius. Yes, Ed adds, feeling practically drunk on the relief flooding his brain.
Very wise. Well done.
Lucius will be staying with us tonight, Steed says. I thought we could have a nice dinner. Well, not with any fish, of course. But I'm sure we could scrounge up something, and then we could open up a bottle of wine and catch up.
Sounds great, Ed says.
And it does, because that means he can use Lucius as a proper distraction as he finishes setting up the library. 7 books. 7 books is going to be the key, he can tell. That's so much better than 6 books. Lucius, why don't I show you to your... Hello? I was told this place was an inn.
The group turns as one to see a lanky man standing in the doorway with bright red hair and glasses. Not as sexy as the one Steed wears, though, to be fair, that's an impossible bar to surpass, a fact Ed is well aware of despite never actually having seen Steed in said glasses. The man has a satchel slung over one shoulder, and what appeared to be a large chest on wheels behind him. What a brilliant contraption. It would certainly make lugging chests of treasure from room to room a hell of a lot easier. "Can't tell you how relieved I am to find you here," the man says. "Being in the middle of nowhere, I thought I might have to sleep in the woods." "Well, today's your lucky day," Steed, ever a man of action, says, gesturing for him to come inside. "Welcome to our inn, your home away from home. We're delighted to have you." Ed frowns. If Lucius is spending the night, and so is this fucking guy. "Looks like we're booked up for the night," Steed exclaims. "The first time that's ever happened. Ed, quick, go get the no occupancy sign. I have been waiting for the day we can finally put it out." Steed, Ed says, drawing Steed to one side by the elbow. "Don't you think we should discuss this first?" "What?" Steed turns to him, puzzled. "It's an inn. We welcome guests." "Right, but we already have a guest." Ed juts his chin toward Lucius. "Do we really need to?" "Well, we have two guest rooms," Steed says. "So it all works out perfectly." "But Lucius is a special guest," Ed insists frantically. "Don't you think we should give him the full run of the place while he's here? Especially after nearly drowning? Why, he'll need practically a whole room just to dry his clothes." "I'm sorry, is this not an inn?" the man at the doorway asks. "It is. It's not." Ed tries his best to ignore the way Steed's looking at him with the most adorably baffled expression, and instead turns his attention to the stranger. "Listen, man, you were already planning on sleeping in the woods, right? Tell you what, I'll find you a nice soft patch of dirt, even bring you out some blankets and some food. It'll be all fucking kinds of fucking plush and comfortable."
"Ed!"
Steed exclaims. "I'm sorry, sir, I'm not sure what's gotten into my partner. Please, set down your things. What brings you to the area?"
"I'm heading to the market tomorrow," the man who doesn't know how to read a fucking room says, wheeling his chest in behind him. "I'm a bookseller."
Ed freezes. 7 books would be good, probably, but a whole chest full? He carefully disguises his interest by a generous 82% with an airy, "Oh?" "Apparently the chap who was selling books got brutalized by a customer the other day and is now refusing to return," the man who is about to make Ed the happiest man in the very full inn continues. "And I have a much larger inventory than he did, so I dare say I'll be very successful."
Ed's gaze narrows on the wheelie chest.
"Fascinating."
"Lucius, sorry, but you'll have to leave."
"What?"
"What?" Steed and Lucius ask in unison.
"This gentleman has come a long way," Ed says. "We can't have him sleeping out in the woods. Wouldn't be hospitable."
"Nobody will be sleeping out in the woods," Steed throws up his hands. "We have 2 perfectly good guest rooms."
Ed just barely holds in his groan. "Why can't Steed just get on the same page as him on this? But of course, the only time they have a full house is when he's trying to hide an almost fucking library from his boyfriend."
His boyfriend.
"But it's fine. This will all be fine. He just needs to come up with yet another perfect foolproof plan. And, lightning quick, he's got it. 1, get the book from Lucius. 2, get rid of Lucius. 3, steal all of this redhead's books. 4, get rid of the redhead." "That's just 4 things. Basically nothing. He can do this."
"So, you're right," Ed says. "Don't know what I was thinking. Listen, Steed, why don't you show... Sorry, I didn't catch your name."
"Roger."
The man who couldn't have a better name like Jeff or fucking Leslie says.
"Roger," Ed repeats, "to room number 1, and I'll help Lucius dry off a bit."
"Wonderful," Steve claps his hands. "Roger, you'll have to tell me all about your books. I'm sure you have quite the impressive collection."
"For now," Ed thinks, and grabs Lucius by the shoulder and tugs him outside into the sun.
"You have to leave," Ed says immediately.
"Yeah, well, you don't have to tell me twice. Jim says when they and Archie stayed, you 2 fucked audibly all night long. And then stole their holiday beach reads. I'll pass, thanks." Lucius digs into his waterproof satchel and hands Ed an oversized book with the words, My Wondrous Journey, A Life at Sea, emblazoned in gold letters across the front. Here, I think we agreed upon 10 doubloons after the initial deposit.
Wait, hold on, man,
Ed says, holding up a hand. You don't want to stay.
Not particularly,
Lucius says impatiently. 10 doubloons?
But why not?
Ed tucks the book under his arm.
I thought we were going to have a nice dinner, open a bottle of wine, and stay up all night catching up.
Ed, a minute ago you were desperate for me to get off your property, Lucius says. Now I'm trying to do just that, because I've got more than enough zaddies waiting for me back on the Revenge without dealing with you two, and you suddenly have a problem with it.
Well, yeah, Ed says, because I thought you'd want to stay. Now I know you're just dying to leave the second you got here. Bit hurtful, if I'm being honest.
Fucking Christ. Lucius rolls his eyes. I forgot how annoying you lot are.
Hurtful, not to mention rude.
Ed harumps as he digs for his coin purse and pulls out the agreed-upon sum of coins and hands them to Lucius. Thanks, Lucius says, and deposits them into his satchel. Once paid, he finally softens.
Creatives,
Ed thinks with a shake of his head.
You know, Frenchie was talking about coming by in about a month with the whole crew. Make a whole thing of it?
Yeah, that'd be fucking great, Ed says, clapping Lucius's shoulder.
Get the whole gang back together again.
He pauses.
Only you can't stay here. We only have the one guest room, you know. Bit hard to squeeze all of you in, unless you want to draw for it. Or rock, paper, scissors. I'd say a duel, but I've been enjoying retirement, and cleaning up bloodstains would really be annoying. Unless we did it outside. I suppose that's an option.
Lucius pats Ed's hand on his shoulder, gently detaches it, and gives him a lazy wave.
See, Ed. We could have a talent show,
Ed calls after him.
Lucius, tell them all to start rehearsing. We'll do a talent show.
Lucius doesn't answer, just gives him another fluttering wave.
Some people just don't have any respect for the arts.
Ed sighs and walks back to the inn. Roger, it turns out, is rather chatty, which is useful because he's able to distract Steed while Ed continues to go in and out of the library, making some more finishing touches. But it's also annoying because Ed can barely get a word in edgewise, which is preventing him from laying down the foundation for the fuckery he's been cleverly devising all afternoon. Now me, Roger drones. I prefer to use a ribbon as a bookmark. It just adds a certain flair, you know? But I've been seeing some people start selling bookmarks made of metal. Can you believe it? He asks, not giving either Ed or Steed any time to confirm or deny their belief. Seems like a bit of a waste to me, and I worry if it would damage the spines long term. But it sure is fascinating. I just wonder...
The inn's haunted. Ed blurts out.
Well, sometimes if God doesn't open a door, you have to just bust through the lock anyway. He's pretty sure his mother had said something along those lines to him at some point. Roger freezes. What?
Nothing to get worried about,
Ed says, stretching out in his chair with 15% casualness and 6% easygoingness, and doing his best to avoid the glare Steed is undoubtedly sending his way.
Just, he really likes books, the ghost. So, he'll probably like you, being a bookseller and all.
But what if he doesn't? Roger whispers, his eyes wide with fear behind his glasses.
Gotcha.
Ed shrugs, 100% laissez-faire.
Dunno, mate. Never happened to me before. But I suspect he'll kill you. That's the ghostly way, isn't it?
Ed! Steed hisses under his breath, as Roger launches into what's likely another very long story about a haunted bookstore he once visited in St. Augustine. What are you doing? Do you want to run a guest out?
Just wanted to see if I could shock him into shutting up,
Ed mutters back.
Apparently not.
Steed snorts.
Well, it was a good effort. Let me try.
Then, more loudly, he says, Oh, yes, our ghost actually loves bedtime stories. Sometimes comes into our room at night and keeps making all these ghastly noises until one of us gets up and reads him a chapter or two. Then he just settles down to sleep.
There's my Steed.
Ed thinks smugly to himself as Roger's jaw drops.
Back on the same page.
He loves it when Steed does the voices. Ed says, Steed's really fucking good at doing the voices.
I am, actually, Steed agrees. And, having stolen the floor back from their guest, just as Ed plans to steal his intriguing wheelie chest of books, Steed begins a thorough demonstration of his narrative talents, while Ed leans back in his chair, pleased to see his plans all coming together. Perfect. Clad in his favorite comfy onesie, repurposed from an old nightgown they found at an estate sale, the gown wasn't his style, but Ed had developed a fondness for onesies not made of burlap. Ed finishes cutting the second hole in the spare set of sheets and drapes them over his head. It's not the most dignified plan, and lacks a lot of the je ne sais quoi of the fuckeries he'd executed over the years as Blackbeard. But one must work with what one has. And besides, Roger seems like a simple bloke. If Ed's correctly clocked him the way he suspects he has, this exact stunt will have him running for the hills in 10 seconds flat. Spectrally attired, he opens the door to guest room number 1, just a crack, and slips inside. As he predicted, the floorboards creak immediately. He and Steed haven't gotten around to fixing those yet. Roger, still snoring away, rolls over fitfully in his bed. Not taking all that much care to keep quiet, because really, Ed thinks this will go better if Roger is terrified enough to soil himself, Ed makes his way to the foot of the bed, where the wheelie chest lays flat on its side. Perfect. Ed hoists the chest up so it's on its wheels, and begins to roll it out of the room. Unfortunately, he's underestimated how difficult it is to maneuver the chest when he's wearing a sheet that goes well past his toes, and his visibility is limited to 2 small holes. Also, it's dark, and Roger's snores are really fucking distracting. And somehow the chest winds up underneath Ed's feet, and he's getting all tangled up in the sheets, and he snatches at the bed frame to keep from falling, and...
Fuck!
Roger startles awake.
What's that?
He mumbles. Ed flails his arms about, partially to regain his balance, partially to really sell the whole ghost shtick. 50-50, really.
Ooh. Are you the bloody ghost?
Roger asks, scrambling to a sitting position.
Ooh,
Ed agrees.
I've come for my bedtime story.
Fuck, fuck, fuck,
Roger whimpers.
Where are my glasses?
There's a clatter of objects falling, and Ed smiles. They're back on track.
Who will read me a story?
Ed wails dramatically.
I must have a story, or else you'll join me in an eternal search for knowledge.
I'll do anything to avoid that,
Roger cries.
Please, I only took up bookselling because I couldn't make it as an accountant.
Ha, too right.
Run,
Ed demands, making his voice as low and intimidating as possible, and never return.
Okay, okay, Roger sobs. I'll just take my books and...
Leave the books,
Ed bellows.
You won't need them where you're going.
Several things then happen very fast. There's a rapid thudding of footsteps, the sound of the door slamming against the wall, and the familiar feeling of a strong, sexy rectangle slamming into Ed amidst a tangled jumble of sheets. Alas, this time it's not in the sexy way. Ed struggles to free himself from the sheets, which is made all the more difficult by the fact that Steed's fighting to restrain his limbs. He tries to shout, but the fabric muffles his voice, which is already being drowned out by Steed's shouts.
What did you do to Ed?
Steed cries out.
I'm telling you, if you laid one finger on him, I'll...
It's the ghost!
Roger cries.
The book-loving ghost!
It's not a bloody ghost,
Steed snarls, hospitality forgotten. And Ed, much to his relief, feels the sheet being pulled away from his face. It's... Ed?
Honestly, you should be insulted you didn't recognize my body, babe.
Ed says, looking up at Steed, clad in his fiercest lavender silk pajamas, straddling his waist.
Seriously? How many times have we been in this position?
It's been approximately 200 times, by Ed's calculations. The other 62% of the time, they're the other way around.
Must be the adrenaline,
Steed says, voice wobbling a little as he loosens his grip on Ed's limbs.
I woke up and you weren't in bed,
And then I heard all the commotion in the next room. I thought we had an intruder.
Nah, love, just me,
Ed says. He reaches up and strokes Steed's cheek comfortingly.
Just a friendly neighborhood ghost.
Steed's face softens, and he leans down to kiss him.
Oh, Ed,
he whispers against his cheek.
I'm so glad you're okay.
Unbelievable, Roger says. Ed looks over and sees he's wearing his glasses finally, which have one shattered lens.
You know, I didn't expect much for an inn in the middle of nowhere, but I thought I'd at least get basic hospitality. Maybe some amenities. Not some weird ghost roleplay between the owners.
Steed sits up.
What do you mean roleplay?
What do you mean, what do I mean?
Roger shrieks.
You're making out with a man who wandered into my bedroom pretending to be a ghost.
Actually, they're not making out right now. Ed doesn't point out, specifically because Roger keeps interrupting what was definitely promising to be one of their top 100 fucks, easily. If only there were a way to...
Ah, I can see why you might think that, Steed says solemnly.
But you see, Ed died years ago. Ed stares up at him, helplessly starry-eyed.
He's brilliant.
All the blood drains from Roger's face.
He's a ghost?
Steed shrugs, and he really loves books.
I'm getting the fuck out of here,
Roger mutters. And then, not even bothering to collect his things, he jumps out of bed and sprints out the door. Once they hear the front door to the inn slam shut, Ed and Steed dissolve into a fit of giggles.
Quick thinking, babe,
Ed says, running his fingers admiringly through Steed's messy curls.
He wasn't expecting that.
Well, technically, I didn't even lie. Steed preens. I just didn't mention that you came back to life.
Yeah, thanks to you.
Ed smiles into the curve of Steed's neck.
My beautiful mermaid.
My gorgeous ghost. Steed tilts his head. Although, I'm not quite sure what that's about.
Mind filling me in?
Ed sighs. He'd hoped to have a bit more time. At least enough to get the newly acquired books on the shelves. But he supposes the jig is up. After giving Steed one final kiss, he pushes himself to his feet.
Come on, I have something to show you.
Ed had a million strategies for how he'd present the library to Steed. He'd thought about leaving a trail of book pages like rose petals leading to the door. Although he scrapped that idea pretty quickly due to both the fact that it'd create a mess and that it would be a waste of a perfectly good book, or very casually suggesting to Steed they share a brandy in the library and watch as his jaw dropped, or maybe kneeling down and presenting Steed's reading glasses in their case to him like an engagement ring and telling him he'd need them. He'd wanted romance, drama, something absolutely unforgettable. In the end, all he does is open the door and say, with 100% of the sincerity in the world, and not even a hint of elaborate strategy,
I hope you like it.
Steed steps into the room, gasps. When he looks back at Ed, his eyes are filling with tears.
You made me a library?
Aye. There are 100 protests ready to spill forth, that the library should have been better, grander, more worthy of Steed, but they all die on Ed's tongue the second Steed captures his lips with his own.
It's perfect,
Steed says, with a wide, watery smile when they finally part.
It's absolutely perfect.
Thank you, Ed. Ed gives a bashful shrug.
I know it's not like the one you had on the ship, or like the one you probably had in Barbados, but...
You stop that right now, Steed says. I told you it was perfect, and I meant it. It's the best library in the entire world. And now we can promote ourselves as the only inn in the area with a library. He looks around the room, taking in every detail, then looks back at Ed with a sheepish smile.
On second thought, maybe not. I kind of want to keep it for myself.
Ed smiles.
You really like it?
I love it, Steed says. What on earth gave you the idea?
Just wanted to do something nice for you,
he says. He hesitates, settles on total honesty.
And your glasses.
Steed's lips quirk upwards, making the cutest little lines around his mouth.
My glasses? I just would like to see them.
Steed laughs,
and his eyes are so bright and twinkly that all Ed can think about are the fireworks that exploded around them the first time they made love.
Ed, darling, you didn't have to make me a whole library just to see my glasses. You could have just asked.
Ed leans forward, shimmies his shoulders in the way he knows Steed finds irresistible.
And where's the fun in that?
You may have a point there, Steed says. Hold on. He scurries out of the room, and Ed barely even has time to wonder what might be up before he's back, standing in the doorframe with one arm stretched far too casually over his head. And reading glasses. Ed immediately feels his mouth water. Fuck, it was all worth it. He's seen Steed in all kinds of get-ups. Fancy suits with ribbons and frills, sassy little camping outfits, leather trousers paired with shirts cut down to his damn navel. He's seen him with his hair set in bouncy curls and full waves, and slicked back away from his gorgeous face. He's seen him standing stiff and proper, and also with sweat dripping off his brow as he finishes a hard day's work at the inn. All varieties of Steed Bonnet, all perfect and magnificent in their own ways. They were all familiar to Ed by now, although the promise of an adventure in each new day they shared together added a spark of intrigue and novelty to each one. But nothing, nothing could compare to the way Steed looked with his sexy little reading glasses. They frame his face perfectly, somehow make his gaze more intense and gentler at the same time. And there's something about the way Steed cocks his chin with those glasses on his face that makes Ed want to drop straight to his knees and take him in his mouth. He wants to look up and see Steed looking down at him, really looking at him, with the enhancement of those marvelous spectacles, and know that he's being seen more deeply than ever before. Hello, Steed says, his voice a touch lower and more formal than usual. I thought I might sample this establishment's library.
Oh, fuck, yes.
Ed nods, barely hiding his eagerness.
Yes, yes, right this way, sir.
He gestures toward the bookshelves with a dramatic flourish.
May I help you find something in particular?
Steed lowers his arm, strokes his chin with his thumb and forefinger.
You know, I've really enjoyed being surprised lately. Why don't you show me your favorite, Mr. Librarian?
I'd love to,
Ed says, and beckons with two fingers for Steed to follow him. At the bookshelf, he pauses. He obviously hasn't had time to stock the shelves with Roger's collection, so it's difficult to really sell that he's deeply considering all the literary wonders of the universe in hopes of selecting the option that will be the most compelling to his patron. Still, Edward Teach puts his all into everything, including, but obviously not limited to, strategically choosing a book that will lead to Steed ripping open his onesie and fucking his brains out. Ed says, making a great show of rumination. Let's see what might be suitable for a gentleman such as yourself. Yes. Steed comes up behind him, and Ed can feel the hard line of his cock pressed up against the curve of his ass.
Let's.
Ed's breath catches in his throat.
Fuck strategy.
He wants to rub back against him, wants to feel Steed's dick grow even harder, but he knows it'll be all the sweeter if he waits. So instead, he runs his fingers down the spine of the books, considering each one carefully, stroking them all the way he knows he'll soon be stroking Steed's cock.
There's the Canterbury Tales,
he offers.
Or perhaps you might like something by Hobbes.
He skips over Shakespeare, naturally, as a book of that size will not lend itself to the type of activities he's hoping to elicit. He also passes over the book Lucius wrote, as he knows he likely won't be able to stop himself from reading it immediately. He pauses at one tan book that has no title on its spine.
Or perhaps this one?
Steed's arm drapes over Ed's, and he covers Ed's hand with his own. As he does so, his hips thrust, just the slightest bit, against Ed's ass, and Ed can't quite stifle a moan. Yes, Steed says. He moves his hips again, and this time Ed knows it isn't accidental. Let's try this one. Ed pulls the book out and looks down at the title.
Parasites of Marine Fish and Cephalopods.
He looks up through his lashes at Steed. There are a crinkling of lines at the bridge of Steed's nose, and a slight frown upon his face,
but he quickly shakes it off and adopts a smolder once more. Yes, he says, his voice like velvet and leather. I love it. He takes the book from Ed's hands, and there's a moment when the two of them are standing there, gazing upon each other with their lips parted and their breaths coming heavy as they grip the book on fucking octopus parasites between them. It would be so easy to lean in for a kiss, to break the spell and fucking devour Steed the way he himself wants to be devoured, and Ed aches with the need of it. But then Steed simply quirks an eyebrow, walks over to an armchair, and takes a seat. Quite a comfortable chair, Steed says as he opens up the book. Won't you join me? Ed doesn't quite know what he's playing at, but nods and grabs a book at random off the shelf. Of course, he says smoothly, heading for the other chair. Ah-ah. Steed holds up his hand and beckons Ed toward him. I said, won't you join me? Ed breathes a sigh of relief. There are some times he enjoys drawing out their games, but tonight he's too eager, too impatient, too fucking hard to wait. He takes his place on Steed's lap, back to Steed's broad, broad chest, pleased when he hears Steed let out a sharp gasp as Ed grinds down on his cock. There you are, Steed says. Now let's begin. He flips open the small book and turns to the first chapter. Parasites are a much maligned but integral part of our complex ecosystem, comprising. Ed quickly realizes it doesn't matter what Steed reads him, be it great literature or the classification of parasitic groups that attack slippery little sea creatures, because all he can focus on is the way Steed's cock is hot and thick beneath him, and the way his voice melts over Ed like molten wax. Ed can't help but shift against the pressure, feeling the way his ass glides over the smooth silk of Steed's pajamas. It's one of his favorite positions, this, rubbing against Steed, feeling the effect Ed's proximity has on him. Some days he and Steed stay like this for hours, just grinding against each other, never even taking their dicks out, just teasing each other until they can't take it any longer and come in their trousers. It's fucking hot. But hot as it is, thank fuck that's not the case today. Steed doesn't even pause his reading as he reaches around Ed's front and deftly unfastens his buttons, then pulls out his cock. Ed gasps as he bucks into Steed's hand. Shh, Steed says, pausing from his reading for the first time since this game began. This is a library. Ah, fuck. So that's the game. Ed swallows and nods. He wants to turn around and see Steed's expression, see a likely blush stain his cheeks and beads of sweat begin to form on his brow. He wants to see those fucking reading glasses that started this whole thing, but he knows that will likely be the end for him. Like, a 90% chance. Maybe even 95. So instead, he bites his lip as he thrusts into Steed's fist, trying hard not to moan. That's it, Steed says. That's my good kitten. You can be so quiet, can't you? Ed whimpers. Fuck, it feels so good. It always feels so good. Steed knows just where to touch him to steadily increase his pleasure without bringing him over the edge too soon. And Ed always feels so, so beautiful in his hands. Can you feel what you do to me? Steed asks, thrusting his hips upward. And for one hysterical moment, Ed thinks he may just be able to fuck him even through both of their pajamas. Feel that beautiful? Ed thrusts forward into Steed's hand, backwards into Steed's cock. It's not enough. He knows he needs more. But at the same time, it's so sweet, and it feels so good, and he's been so good. He just... Stand up. Ed stills. What? Stand up, Steed repeats, and lightly swats Ed's ass. You wanted me to look at you, didn't you? Let me look at you. Knees shaky, Ed obeys. He takes several steps away from Steed, his onesie slipping from his shoulders as he does so. Good, Steed says. He pulls his cock out of his pajama pants and gazes at Ed with such a sharp intensity through his glasses that Ed thinks he might incinerate on the spot. Let it fall. Ed nods. Ed does. This is Steed's show now. What will you have me do? Touch yourself, Steed says. Let me see you. Really? Steed didn't need to give him that order. because Ed thinks his hand would have found his way to his dick regardless, given all of the everything around him. Steed looks so fucking hot just sitting there in his silk pajamas, casually stroking his cock like he's some kind of hedonist fish king upon a throne of coral. And fuck, it was worth the fucking wait to see him in his glasses like this. It's still his Steed, still the man he's known and loved for years now, but there's something new about him. It's funny how some thin pieces of metal and glass can transform a face, make it look all the more striking, and somehow even more handsome. Well, maybe not more handsome. Ed finds all of Steed's looks the most handsome ever, even though that's a mathematical impossibility. But this is a different kind of handsome. A new handsome. One Ed's eager to explore. And Ed can't look away, because Steed's eyes are locked on him, on the way he strokes his cock and fondles his balls and runs a pre-cum-slickened finger over his nipples. Ed doesn't know if it's because Steed can see better, and is observing new details about the way Ed looks when his breath catches when he strokes a particularly sensitive spot, or how his legs tremble without Steed's weight supporting him underneath, or if it's a case that Ed is more focused on the way Steed is looking at him. Either way, Ed's harder than he can remember being in ages. Still, he does his best to match Steed's steady pace. He and Steed have had sex in all kinds of positions and locations, but there's still something startlingly intimate about this. Not touching, but touching all at once, entirely on display. "Come here," Steed says. His voice is raspy, and Ed knows that underneath the calm expression on his face, he's just as needy as Ed is. "And hold out your hand." Ed does, and Steed twines Ed's fingers in his and pulls him down for a fierce, searing kiss. Ed tries to use the position to his advantage and drive himself closer, maybe melt back into Steed's lap, but then Steed rips his mouth away. Strategy deflected. "Here," Steed says. He pulls out a small vial of lubricant from his pajama shirt pocket and drops some of the slick liquid onto Ed's fingers. "Prepare yourself." "Oh, yeah, okay. The game is gaming, then." Ed rubs it over his fingers and moves to work them inside of him, but Steed tisks him. "Turn around," he says bossily. "I want to see it." "Fuck," Ed moans. He spreads his legs and bends over slightly, in a way that will really show it off when he slowly corkscrews his fingers inside of his hole. They make the most obscene noises, harmonizing with the sound of Steed fisting his cock in a kind of pornographic symphony. This is Steed's design, and all Ed can think is that he's spreading himself, and Steed is watching him, and he's fucking himself, and Steed is watching him, and his cock is hard and leaking, desperate for release, and Steed is watching him. "That's it," Steed gasps. "Oh, you look so gorgeous. I can see everything, everything." And that's just it, isn't it? Steed's always been able to read him like a fucking book. All the parts of himself that he'd always kept hidden, tucked safely away so nobody could turn them into weapons against him. All that plotting and strategizing to stay at the top of his game, to stay one step ahead. And with the utmost care, Steed had massaged those parts out of him, reveled in them, made Ed feel beautiful and whole because of those parts and not in spite of them. So when Ed stands there, exposing himself to the man who possesses his heart in every possible way, enhanced by both Steed's glasses and by his love, well, he shivers. No words, no strategies, just Ed. "I think you're ready for me," Steed says. "Come here, darling." Finally. Ed clambers to lower himself onto Steed's cock and groans. "Oh, fuck." "Shh," Steed says. "Library voices." Ed nods, but still can't completely suppress the low keen escaping from his throat. It doesn't matter how many times he's ridden Steed. The feeling of being so full, of knowing it's Steed buried deep inside of him, gripping his sides, kissing any part of him he can reach, is always overwhelming. "Good kitten," Steed whispers. "You take my cock so well, don't you?" Ed's careful, oh so careful, not to shout the way he'd like. He doesn't need to play along, but God, he wants to. Yes. They move together, so perfectly, so seamlessly, Steed thrusting his hips up into Ed, who grinds down to meet him. So it's not even clear who's fucking whom. Doesn't matter even, aside from feeling fan-fucking-tastic. Ed's cock is hard and bouncing between them, catching occasionally on Steed's silk pajamas. Such an exquisite tease, soft as anything, and gripping him in the lightest of caresses, held together by sticky strands of pre-cum. I know it feels good, Steed says. You're making a mess of my pajamas. He is, and he loves it, the debauchery of it all, being all naked and exposed while Steed remains in his fancy silky pajamas, riding his gorgeous dick, trying his best to bite back his moans. And all the while, Steed is staring at him, and Ed swears with those glasses he can look into his very soul and can read all thoughts in Ed's mind, even the ones in itty-bitty old-fashioned font that's nearly impossible to decipher. Fuck, Ed grunts. He can't hold off anymore. He drives down faster, harder, thrilled when Steed matches his pace. Both of them in it now. Both of them on the same page. Fuck. Fuck, fuck. That's it, Steed gasps, and he finally, finally, takes Ed's cock in his hand. You want to come, sweetheart? Please, Ed begs. Please, Steed. Yes. Steed moves faster, in time with his thrusts, but not hard enough, not tight enough, not quite, to bring Ed fully over the edge. Because you've been so good, so quiet. So good, Ed agrees, his voice barely more than a breathy whisper. So quiet. And can you continue to be quiet for me? Steed asks. Even when you come? Steed's cock hits him right there, and Ed starts to cry out, but then he remembers his orders. He swallows it back, and it ends up sounding like a choked sob, and it's good. It's good. He's being so fucking good. Can't have all the patrons see, Steed says, and despite the fact he's forming coherent sentences, his face is flushed red, and his hips are snapping beneath Ed, and his pajama bottoms must be slipping down his legs, because now Ed feels skin on skin rather than skin on silk, every time his ass slaps back down onto Steed's hairy thighs, and, oh, fuck. Can't have them see how desperate you are for me, how badly you want my cock. Ed squeezes his eyes shut, throws back his head, because it's all too much. And he thinks if he hears one more word, he might just... Because that's mine, Steed whispers, but it sounds like a shout. Edward. Yes, Ed gasps. Yes, yes. Look at me, Steed demands. Now. Ed forces his eyes open, draws a deep breath, and obeys. There's Steed, his stunning hazel eyes behind his sexy little reading glasses, looking at him. Seeing him. If Ed were capable of breathing at that moment, the realization would have stolen his last breath. Come for me, Steed says, never taking his gaze away from Ed. Come on, love, do it. Make a fucking mess of me. It's all too much. Ed can't hold back the steady, keening moans anymore. He's lost it. All ability to strategize gone out the window. In his efforts to keep hushed, his sounds have become more needy, more desperate, and the realization makes him even harder. And suddenly his entire body is on edge, and all he can think about is Steed's dick driving into him as he stares into his soul. And fuck, the man is determined, and the only thing he cares about is Ed's pleasure, and the only thing he cares about is Ed. Simple, but effective. Ed's climax overtakes him. And he comes with Steed's name on his lips, and he never looks away. Not even when Steed grips his hips so tightly he's sure there'll be bruises in the morning. Not even when Steed slams into him even harder. Not even when Steed whispers, fuck, 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 like some kind of licentious mantra. Not even when Ed feels Steed pulse within him, and for a moment he's full, full, full. And then Steed's cum spills back out of him onto skin and silk. They sit there, joined together at the most intimate juncture, drawing deep, heaving breaths. Shh,
They whisper, their breaths intermingling as one soft, sweet sound.
Shh.
Sometime later, after they've cleaned up after themselves, and they've put their new books on the shelves, Steed says he'll need to take some time to organize them in the light of day. But Ed is eager to see what kind of space they take up. Steed pulls Ed back into the armchair they didn't despoil moments ago, and wraps his arms around him. I can't believe you did this for me, he says, and a fuckery to boot. I still wish I could have filled up more of the shelves, Ed says. It may take some time. We already didn't have many opportunities to purchase books around here, and we may have developed a bit of a reputation for being less than hospitable to booksellers. Oh, that's all right, Steed says, and gives him a tight squeeze. We have plenty of time to fill up the shelves with stories of our own. Yeah, that's not a bad plan. Ed smiles. I got some killer ideas. As do I, Steed says. Do you want to have a little brainstorming session? And maybe jot some of them down? Maybe tomorrow. Ed curls himself up into a tighter ball in the curve of Steed's arms, feeling very small and very precious. Would you fancy maybe reading me a story before bed? Steed drops a kiss to the top of Ed's head. I'd love to. He reaches for the little table that Ed built, upon which is a book, his reading glasses, and a vase with a single flower with broad pink petals. It feels peaceful, familiar, like this has always been their routine, like they were always meant to have this, and didn't have to fight tooth and fucking nail to get here. They slip into it as easily as their favorite silk dressing gowns, and then, with his glasses upon his face, a book in his hand, and Ed in his arms, Steed begins to read. Once upon a time... Ed smiles and rests his head upon Steed's broad, comfortable chest. What can he say? He loves a good happily ever after. The end.